For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It's March the 27th. We are in Parashas Ekev, and we are starting from Parakhes chapter 8, Pasuk Hey, verse 5, page 982. So, we'll change that. Okay, here we go. The Pasuk says, V'yadata'im levavecha, you will know with your heart, or in your heart, ki kasher yeyaser ishes beno, just as a man will, literally means afflict his son, Hashem alokecha miyasereka, that's how Hashem afflicts you. And the way that they translate that is chastise his son. That's the way Hashem will do with you as well. Meaning we had just spoken about the mun, and we spoke about the challenge of the mun. We'll have more about that a little bit later, but that Hashem is not trying to put us through difficulty just for the sake of making life difficult for us, but rather just as a father will do that with a son in order for the son to grow. That's why a parent will put their child through difficulty. It's only for the good of the child, so the child will grow. That is what Hashem is doing with us as well. Which leads us to a very important statement in the Gemara. Chazal tell us, there are three matanos tovos, three good gifts that Hashem gave the Jewish people that were only given to us through yisurin, through difficulties, through, you can call it affliction, you can call it challenges, but we only get these three good gifts through challenge. They are Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. There are other good gifts that we got without Yisurin. For example, Shabbos. Shabbos is also a Matana Tova. It's a good gift, but that was given to us as a freebie. These were given to us only with accompanying Yisurin, either afflictions or difficulties, challenges of some sort. So again, they are Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. The way that we know each of these, the Gemara proves it with various psukim, various verses. And this is the pasuk, this is the verse that's quoted for the source that we only get Eretz Yisrael through Yisurin, through affliction. Because it says that Hashem afflicts us as a father afflicts his child. And we're about to have a description of Eretz Yisrael, as we're about to read. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vishamarta es mitzvos Hashem alokecha. You should guard the mitzvos of Hashem, your God. Valeches bidrachav, to go in his ways. Uliyiro, someone to fear him. Ki Hashem alokecha miviacha el eretz tova. Because Hashem, your God, is bringing you to a good land. Eretz nachale mayim, a land of rivers of water. Ayanos usahomos, with springs and wells. Yotzim babika uvahar, that come out of the valleys and out of the mountains. So it's a good land with a lot of water flowing through it that Hashem is giving you. But again, it only comes through yisurin, through affliction. Why is it that these three gifts, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba, must come through affliction, whereas, let's use Shabbos as our comparison. Shabbos is also a good gift, but it was not given to us through affliction. It was just given to us. The Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba really are a unit. We know that the only reason why the world was created is for that Hashem wanted to give good to those that he created to us, and that the way we are able to have that good is by earning it. And the way we earn it is through the struggle with our Yetzer Hara. That cuts to the core of why we're here. We are here to deal with our challenges. Hashem put us in a world that is full of challenges, and our job is to struggle. Adam la'amol yulad, a man is born to struggle, to put in toil and effort. That's why we're here. If life were easy, then it would be meaningless. The only reason why life has meaning is because it's challenging. And that's why we're here. But it's a process, and it's a unit, meaning that Hashem gave us the Torah, which tells us and explains to us how to go about serving Him, what to do and what not to do, and gives us perspective. And not only does it tell us what to do and not to do, it also is in itself the way to fortify ourselves to be able to engender Yirah Shamayim, fear of heaven, and to be able to serve Hashem properly. And He also gave us Olam Haba. Olam Haba is the future, the ultimate reward for keeping the Torah properly. Eretz Yisrael is the place in this world that is best suited for us to serve Him properly, where the Torah can be kept in the best possible way. So these three really speak to the very essence of why the world was created and why we are here. To serve Him, the Torah tells us what to do, how to serve Him, where to serve Him properly, Eretz Yisrael, and then the ultimate reward for serving Him, that is Olam Haba. Since the whole purpose of the world is to struggle, the whole purpose of the world is to essentially fight against ourselves and bend ourselves to serve Him, then these three essential pieces to the whole essence of the world are going to involve struggle. They're going to involve difficulty. They're not going to be simply handed to us, because that would defeat the purpose. The whole point of the world is to struggle. Something like Shabbos, on the other hand, is a mitzvah. Shabbos is a mitzvah. Shabbos, in and of itself, is a struggle. It didn't need to be a struggle to give us Shabbos, because Shabbos is a mitzvah that has challenge without any additional challenge, meaning we are challenged to keep Shabbos, to do what we're supposed to do and not do what we're not supposed to do. And even though anybody who keeps Shabbos appreciates how beautiful and wonderful it is, anybody who keeps Shabbos feels that it is a wonderful gift from Hashem, nevertheless, it does have its challenges. And it's not something one can do without preparation, without thinking about it, studying about it, knowing what to do, what not to do, and it certainly makes it a lot easier to be in a community where everybody else is doing it. If one is by oneself someplace, it's much, much more difficult. So the Shabbos doesn't need to be a challenge in us getting it. It's a challenge after we already have it. But the other things over here, getting the Torah, that's a privilege that we have, which is the roadmap of what we're supposed to do and how we're supposed to behave. That had Yisurin, that had a challenge to get it. Same thing with Olam Haba, and the same thing with Eretz Yisrael. And so here we have the pasuk that tells us that Eretz Yisrael includes challenge to get it. So when we see that it's not easy to get Eretz Yisrael, and it's not easy to hold on to Eretz Yisrael, that shouldn't be surprising to us. We're already told it's something which has challenges to have it, to maintain it, Eretz Yisrael is not something that is just a freebie Hashem hands to us. We have to work to get it, work to maintain it, work to stay in it. Once we're on the topic of Eretz Yisrael, so the Torah continues, Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Well, I'm sorry, we read that already. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Eretz Chita Usaora V'Gefen Useina V'Rimon Eretz Zeis Shemen Udevash. So it's a land of, and here we have the famous seven species. This is the one and only place in the Torah where they're all mentioned. So it is wheat and barley and the vine, meaning grapes, and figs, pomegranates, the olives, it says olive oil, but it means olives, and also dvash, which is honey, but it means date honey, so it's referring to dates. Those are your seven species. We know that if one eats any of these seven species, the bracha achrona, the ending bracha is a special bracha, where if one would eat any other fruit, let's say an apple, the bracha achrona is a borei nefashos. But on these, there's a special bracha of al ha'etz v'al pri ha'etz, a special bracha that is recited after eating these fruits. The first two are not fruits. They are grains, wheat and barley. Wheat and barley eaten as just plain wheat or just plain barley is not considered to be eating them in their proper state. The one would not make a mezonos if one were eating raw wheat or raw barley. But once they are ground up into flour and made into some sort of a baked item, or even a cooked item, whether it is a baked item like a cake or bread, or whether it's a cooked item like pasta, something like that, so the bracha becomes elevated and it becomes either a mizonos or a hamotzi, depending on what it's made into. When it's raw wheat and raw barley, assuming that they are edible, the bracha would be ha'adama. That would be the bracha for raw wheat and raw barley. Ground up into flour, and eating the flour as it is, would be a shahakol. That would be the bracha. It gets actually diminished in its status when you grind it from wheat or barley into flour. But then you take that flour and you combine it with water and you make something out of it, so then the bracha is elevated to either a mezonos or the highest level, a hamotzi. So that is the first two, the wheat and the barley. The last five are all ha'etz. They are all fruits, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and dates. Those are all ha'etz. The truth is that a raw olive is very, very bitter, and it's questionable whether one would recite a bracha at all on a raw olive, but the olives that are sold as food, as things that people eat out of the jar or something like that, those are all pickled. Those are pickled olives. When you pickle an olive, it becomes tasty, and the bracha on an olive is a borei pri ha'etz, as it is on these other fruits. And as I mentioned before, the bracha achrona on these seven species, meaning the five that are a borei pri ha'etz, the bracha achrona is al ha'etz v'al pri ha'etz, a special bracha achrona for those five. The first two, the wheat and the barley, if they are turned into a mezonos, then the bracha achrona is al hamichya. If they are a hamotzi, then the bracha achrona is benching, which we're going to get to shortly. If they're eaten as either a ha'adama, as raw barley or raw wheat, or they're eaten as a shahakol in the form of flour, then the bracha achrona is merely a borei nefashos. It does not have an elevated bracha achrona. The Gemara tells us that there is a hierarchy with brachos, meaning that if you have various foods in front of you and they're all being served simultaneously, then there is a hierarchy of which bracha you should make first, which one you should make second. If food is served in the form of courses, so this food is served to me first, this food is served to me second, then the hierarchy is simply the order that they're served. So if the first thing that's served is a soup, and the soup is a pure broth, so then that soup is a shahakol. Let's say a pure broth chicken soup, that would be a shahakol. And even if the second course is a higher level bracha, let's say the second course is a mizonos, it wouldn't matter. The first bracha that you would recite would be the shahakol because it's the first course served. But if you have several different foods served at the same time, so you have chicken, which is a shahakol, and you have, let's say, pasta, which is a mizonos, and you have a salad, which is a ha'adama, so there's a hierarchy. Mizonos precedes ha'adama, ha'adama precedes shahakol. So the proper order to make the brachos would be to say a mizonos on the pasta and take a bite of the pasta, then to make a ha'adama on the salad and take a bite of the salad, and then to make a shahakol on the chicken and take a bite of the chicken. That would be the order if they were served simultaneously, which means you're eating them all you're all on your plate at the same time. That would be the proper way to do it.
Rabbi.
Yes.
What if have like a pasta salad with chicken and
So it can get complicated. Mm-hmm. It can get complicated when you have various foods that are mixed together. Does it receive separate brachos? Does it receive one bracha? That gets into the fairly complex discussion of Ikar and Tafel. I'll give you the perhaps one of the most common cases of that would be sushi. You have rice, which is a mizonos. You often have vegetables in there, which is a hadama. And you may have fish in there, which is a shahakol. And it's all one thing that you eat in one bite. So what would be the bracha? And that is complicated. What does one do when one has the various things together? And unfortunately, that is beyond the scope of what we're able to cover tonight. If we start down that road, we're going to get into so many what ifs that would require a shiur in and of itself. The reason I'm bringing out the issue of kadima in brachos, which means what precedes what, which one comes first, which one comes second, in a situation where there are several brachos. So you're asking, in a case where it's some sort of a mixed salad, how many brachas are recited? That's what I'm saying is beyond the scope of tonight. But when it's clear that there are more than one bracha to make, there's several brachas to make, and they're all in front of me at the same time, so it's one thing when they are different brachos. Mizonos comes before ha'etz. Ha'etz comes before ha'adama. Ha'adama comes before shahakol. But what happens if they're all the same bracha? So if they're all the same bracha, if I have an apple slice, an orange slice, and a pineapple slice all in front of me. I'm sorry, that was the wrong foods to use. An apple slice, a orange slice, and I meant to say a grapefruit slice. That's what I meant to say. I was thinking grapefruit instead of pineapple. So yeah, those three. So three fruits, apple, orange, and grapefruit, all in front of me. So they're all a bari pri ha'etz. I would only recite one bracha. One bracha will cover all three of them. Which one do I recite the bracha on? Which one do I either hold in my hand or put in my fork and make the bracha and eat that first and then exempt all the other ones? So in that situation where one is an apple, one is an orange, one is a grapefruit, you choose the one that you like best. The one that is chaviv, the one that is best, the one that you like best. And that's the one that you should recite the bracha on. Some people like to save the one they like best for last, but the kavod of the bracha is to recite it on the one that you like best. You can leave over some of it for last, but the bracha should be recited on the one that you like best. What happens if they're all the same? You like them all the same? Well, then any one will do. It's all fine. What happens if one of them is from the Shivas Haminim? One of them is of the seven special species of Eretz Yisrael. So instead of it being an apple, an orange, and a grapefruit, it's an apple, an orange, and a grape. Not a grapefruit, but a grape. A grape is one of the seven species. So there are those who say that in that situation, still, if you like the apple or the orange better, then the bracha would be recited on the apple and the orange. That's a matter of debate. But everybody would agree, if you like them all the same, you should choose the Shiva Saminim. You should choose the one that is of the seven species, which would be the grape. Because it has an elevated status, because it's one of the special fruits of Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, the Bari Pri Ha'et should be recited on the grape instead of the apple or the orange. What happens if you have many of the Shiva Saminim? You have a fig, and you have a date, and you have a grape in front of you. Which one is the bracha recited on? You're only going to make one Bari Pri Ha'etz, but which one do you choose? And you like them all the same. If you like one better than the other, you'll choose that one. But let's say you like them all the same. Which one is it? Now here we have a fascinating rule. So if you look at the pasuk, I'm going to tell this to you the way the Gemara says it, because the way the Gemara says it is really interesting. If we look again at this pasuk, in pasuk Zayin, verse 8. Hold on, let me finish this, then I'll take questions. Hold on one sec. Let's finish this first and we'll take questions. So, pasuk Ches, verse 8. So, the pasuk says, Eretz Chita U'Seora, a land of barley, wheat and barley, V'Gefen U'Se'ena V'Rimon, grapes, figs, and pomegranates, Eretz Zeis Shemen U'Devash, a land of olives and dates. So the Gemara first says, the order of the pasuk is what is, which tells us the hierarchy. Meaning the one that comes first is considered more significant than the one that comes after it. So if we would follow the order of the pasuk, we would say the order is grapes, then figs, then pomegranates, then olives, then dates. That would be the order. And if you have several of them in front of you, the one that would be come earlier in the pasuk would be the one that is more significant. However, the Gemara responds and says it actually depends on how many words follow the word Eretz, land. You see, the word Eretz is repeated in the pasuk. You have Eretz Chita U'Seora, a land of wheat and barley. Well, wheat and barley are not ha'etz. And then, Gefen, Te'ena, Rimon. Gefen, grapes, are the third item listed after the word Eretz. Te'ena, figs, are the fourth. And Rimon, pomegranates, are the fifth. Then it says the word Eretz again. Zeis Shemen, which is olives, is the first after the word Eretz. And Devash, which is date honey, is the second after the word Eretz. Therefore, the conclusion of the Gemara is that actually the order goes as follows. Olives, then dates, because olives are one after the word Eretz, and Devash is two after the word Eretz. So it's olives and then dates, and then grapes, figs, pomegranates. That will be the order, the hierarchy of the fruits, those five fruits that are of the seven species. Okay, so let me take questions now. Yes?
In Rosh Hashanah, we have the simanim. We usually dip the apple in honey and make ha'etz, but we have dates and pomegranates on the plate. What do we actually make the ha'etz on?
Yeah, so in Rosh Hashanah, we have dates and pomegranates, and we also have apple. So what should the Bari Pri Ha'etz be recited on? And as I say often on Rosh Hashanah, and speaking about this in a shir, it should be said not on the apple, but rather on the the species. So with terms of dates and pomegranates, dates precede pomegranates. Because dates are number two and pomegranates are number five.
So only if you go by the Gemara.
Right. Well, the Gemara is the pasuk. What do you mean? The Gemara is the explanation for the pasuk.
Got it.
Right. So that would be the thing to do. Right. Now the Gemara tells us more about these species, which is that you look at them and you say, okay, these are seven special fruits or grains of Eretz Yisrael. Great. But the Gemara tells us that actually each of these are used in special ways by the Torah to measure different halachos. Meaning that there are various halachos that we have, and some of them require measurements. So the most famous would be kizayis. In order to, for instance, have enough food that you have to recite a bracha achrona, or to eat the correct amount of matzah on Pesach, or to eat the correct amount of challah at a Shabbos suda, you have to eat a kizayis. So that's the size of an olive. So olives are used to measure the size, the minimum size of the food that needs to be eaten. But they're all of the fruits and grains are used in various measurements of halacha. So, for example, the date is the size of food that one would be prohibited from eating on Yom Kippur. Kikoseves hagasa. A large date is the size that one is prohibited from eating on Yom Kippur. Now, even though we know you can't even eat a little bit, it doesn't matter the size, but the punishment for violating Yom Kippur would only be for the size of a koseves hagasa, a large date. So the date is the measurement that is used for that. We also have various rules of tumah and tahara that require certain measurements. For instance, the saora, the barley seed would be the minimum size of a human bone that would cause tumah. Of tumas meis, of coming in contact with a dead body, the minimum size would be the size of a saora, of a barley seed, which is small, but if there was a smaller piece, then it would not make a person tamei meis. So that's just an example, but we have others as well. All seven, the Gemara finds situations where they are needed to establish certain halachos. So, in addition to these being special for Eretz Yisrael, meaning that they are they're blessed. Eretz Yisrael is blessed with them, and they get a special bracha, and they're considered to be of elevated status. They're also used in halacha. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Eretz ashalov miskenus tochal bal lechem, a land that is not lacking, you shall eat bread. Lo sechsar kol ba, you shall not lack anything in it. So it's a land that without scarcity you'll eat bread, you won't lack anything in it. Eretz asher avoneha barzel, a land in which its stones are iron. Umeharareha tachtsov nechoshes, and from its mountains you will hew, or you'll be able to get copper out of its mountains. So Eretz Yisrael has all the various things that are needed for life. There's not going to be any need to import things from outside of Eretz Yisrael, and there's also building materials. There's iron. There is copper. And finally, v'achalta v'savata, you will eat, you will be satiated. Uveirachta es Hashem Elokecha, you will bless Hashem your God. Al ha'aretz ha'tova asher nasan lach, on the good land that He has given you. And from here is the source for birchas hamazon, for benching. The source for benching is this pasuk Yud, verse 10. You'll eat, you'll be satiated, you will bless Hashem your God, which is quoted in benching. As you know, in benching itself, we quote this pasuk. the most brachos are dirabbanan. Most brachos are rabbinic in nature. When you get up in the morning and you say the various brachos, the birchos hashachar, those are all dirabbanan. They're rabbinic. When you eat and you make a bracha rishona, you make a shahakol, a mezonos, even a hamotzi, those are all dirabbanan. When you're going to do a mitzvah and you make a bracha, asher kiddushanu b'mitzvah sav tzivanu lahadlik ner shel Shabbos, you make a bracha, that bracha is dirabbanan. It is rabbinic in nature. Almost all brachos are rabbinic, which means that the rabbis told us we should recite brachos. Now, when you recite a bracha, you're using Hashem's name. Since you're using Hashem's name, you have to be careful to use it properly. A misuse of Hashem's name is a Torah violation. So we have to be careful how we recite brachos. But the recitation of brachos in and of themselves are derabbanan, are rabbinic. The exception to this, there's a difference of opinion in one other case, but in the one case that everybody agrees is deoraisa, is from the Torah, is benching, is birchas hamazon. Benching is from the Torah, as we have it says right here, ve'achalta v'savato v'erachas Hashem alokecha, you shall eat, you shall be satiated, and you shall bless Hashem your God. That is where the birchas hamazon or benching is mandated in the Torah. We are required to bless Hashem for the food after we have eaten it. That's what we learn from this pasuk. Now, the pasuk says you will eat and you will be satiated and you'll bless Hashem your God. That means, therefore, there is no Torah requirement to bench unless you are satiated. That means you eat until you are no longer hungry. So if you eat until you're no longer hungry, then you're required to bless Hashem. If you only eat a kezias, then you're not required to bless Hashem. But we do anyway. We do bench, even though we've not satiated ourselves. If you have just a kezias of bread, then you're required to bench. So we bench even though we haven't are not satiated. That is rabbinic in nature, which means you could have two people that are reciting benching together. They're singing Birchas Hamazon together. One is obligated from the Torah. The other is only obligated rabbinically. The one who is satiated is obligated from the Torah. And the one who is not satiated, just had a kezias, is only obligated from the Rabbanan. They're both obligated, but one is rabbinic and one is from the Torah. What's the difference whether one is obligated from the Torah or rabbinically? So there are a few differences, but the primary difference would be in a case of suffix, in a case of doubt. What happens if I ate and then I got busy and I got involved in some other things, I got a phone call, and finally I turn around and I realize the table's not cleared off. And I go back to the table and I say, one second, did I bench? I don't remember, did I bench or not? So if it is only a rabbinic decree, then the rule is safek d'rabbanan l'kula. Then we're lenient and you would not bench because you don't know. So you'd say, okay, I'm not sure, so you wouldn't do it. But if it is a Torah decree, then suffik de'oraisa l'chumra. If you're not sure, you're in doubt about a Torah decree, then you have to go, you have to be stringent. And so, if I'm not sure, but I ate a full meal, so then I'm full, so then in doubt, I would bench. Even though I'm not sure, I may have done it already, but it doesn't matter. Since I don't know, I don't remember, I should bench. Whereas, if I only had a kezias and I don't remember, then I would not bench. That is a primary difference between whether one is obligated from the Torah or only rabbinically. This is true of all brachos.
Why don't you just have another piece of bread.
You could do that if you wish. You're allowed to do that. You could eat another piece of bread and then for sure be chayev to bench. But you don't have to do that. If you're not sure and you didn't have more than a kazayas, you're not required to bench. We would say it's a suffix, you're in doubt, and you don't have to. But you're right. You could do that. What if there is no more bread? What if you're running? You don't have time? You know, there could be situations where it's not so simple to do it. But you're right. That would be the way to cover yourself under all circumstances. All brachos, besides benching, are only rabbinic in nature. Therefore, any time you're not sure if you made a bracha, you do not recite the bracha. Suffolk brachos lahakel, if you're not sure about the bracha, you don't recite the bracha because it's only rabbinic. So, I'm taking a drink, I forgot whether I made a shahakel or not, then I would not recite shahakel. I would just drink without reciting shahakel because shahakel is only derabanan. But since I'm sure I didn't make a bracha, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam, shahakel nia bivaro. Similarly, the after bracha, if a person eats an apple, now they have to make a borei nefashos. They don't remember if they recited the borei nefashos or not. That is only rabbinic, and therefore they would not recite it, because they aren't sure. What is the bracha achrona for the seven species? So we already pointed out, the bracha achrona is a special bracha achrona, which is al ha'etz v'al pri ha'etz, or if it's wheat or barley made into a mizonos, then it'll be al ha'mecha v'al ha'kalkala. There is an opinion which we do not rule with, but there is an opinion in the Mishnayos that the bracha achrona on all seven species is benching, because if you look at the Torah over here, it seems to read that way. We introduce the seven species, and then we segue right into benching. It sounds kind of like the bracha achrona for all seven species is benching. That is one of the opinions of the Tanaim. We do not rule that way. We rule, as we mentioned before, that the bracha achrona is al ha'etz v'al pri ha'etz. But this is one of the opinions, and you can see how that would be understood, since the way the psukim are presented, it looks that way. The Gemara tells us that Hashem has a, so to speak, a special love for us because we are machmir, because we are stringent to bench even when we're not satiated. The Gemara says that the Malachei Hashares, the attending angels, asked Hashem, why do you favor the Jews? Doesn't it say that Hashem doesn't show favoritism? How come you favor the Jews? And Hashem's response, kiviyachol, so to speak, is, how can I not favor the Jews? I told them to bench only when they are satiated. But they are machmir, they are stringent, and they bench even when they only had a kezias. And so, because, even though it's rabbinic, it's mandated rabbinically, but the point is that the Gemara is bringing out how special it is to bench, to recite Birchas HaMazon. It's important to remember that Birchas HaMazon is a special bracha. Birchas HaMazon is comprised of four brachos, actually. It's a special tefillah, the entire thing, and one should treat it properly. Now, in the previous pasuk, in pasuk Tes, verse 9, the pasuk tells us that it's a land that has everything. We learned earlier that it's a land that's full of water and streams and rivers. Eretz Yisrael, we know, there's often a struggle with water, there's a struggle with growing things. It's not always so simple. But the Torah here is telling us that if we are following Hashem's word properly, and if we are keeping the Torah properly, then not only do we get Eretz Yisrael, but Eretz Yisrael becomes a self-sustaining land. Most lands are not self-sustaining. Most lands have an abundance of one type of resource, but are lacking other types of resources. Eretz Yisrael will have everything that is needed. if we keep the Torah properly, then everything will come from the land. There'll be no need for any imports, no need to be dependent on other countries. One could look at Eretz Yisrael with a modern view and say, where's the oil? Which is a fair question. And the answer would be, I can't tell you what the answer will be, I can only speculate, but possible answers would be that if we were keeping the Torah properly, the land would become self-sustaining. So whatever that means, it would be. So if self-sustaining means it has to have oil, then it will have oil. Somehow it'll appear, it'll be there somewhere where it hasn't been tapped yet, hasn't been discovered yet, it'll be there. Or there'll be no need for oil. One of the two. Or maybe there's a third answer. Whatever it is, maybe there'll be another source of power. No need for oil. I don't know the answer to that question. I just know the Torah tells us that the land is self-sustaining. It has the capacity to be self-sustaining. And no need for reliance on other countries. In that, the Pasuk test in verse 9, it tells us also, Eretz Asher Avoneha Varzel, a land that its stones are iron. The Gemara tells us a drasha, Al Tikri Avoneha, don't read it, its stones, Ela Boneha, its builders. Who are the builders of Klal Yisrael? So we know that the builders of Klal Yisrael, Bonayich, are the Talmidei Chachamim, the Torah scholars, are the builders of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, the Gemara says that it says it's a land in which its avaneha, its stones, its Torah scholars are barzel, or iron. And the Gemara says, kol tamar chacham, sheinu kasha ke barzel, any tamar chacham, any Torah scholar who is not strong like iron is not a Torah scholar. A Torah scholar must have the strength, have the backbone to stand up for what the Torah says. The Gemara follows that statement with the warning that the words need to be said, b'nichusa, they need to be said in a pleasant way. The words need to be presented in a pleasant and friendly manner. But the Torah scholar is warned not to back down on what the Torah says. A Torah scholar is warned not to be apologetic about what the Torah says, not to back down, but to be hard as iron and stand up with strength for the words of the Torah, and not to allow the words of the Torah to be misused or misinterpreted, even though at the same time the Torah scholar has to be careful to present the words of the Torah in the proper way. We're going to go a little bit further with a few more minutes that we have left. I want to go a little bit further. I think I'm just debating whether this is our last class before Pesach, so I don't want to stop in a place that's leaving us right in the middle of something. But let's read one more Pasuk. Pasuk Yud Aleph 11 at the top of the page. We'll probably reread this next time. Be careful lest you forget Hashem. Not to guard His mitzvos, His laws, His statutes. That I am commanding you today. So be careful not to forget Hashem. If you turn back, to the previous page, we have in Pasuk Beis verse 2, V'zacharta eskol haderech, remember all the road, Asher holichacha Hashem Elokecha zera ba'im shana ba'midbar, that Hashem, your God, took you in the midbar, took you in the wilderness. So there we're required to remember that Hashem took us along the road, that He took care of us as He took us through the wilderness. Here we're told not to forget Hashem. And in other places as well, we're told either to remember Hashem or not to forget Hashem or not to forget what He did for us. There are many mitzvos that are not mitzvos that require us to say anything or do anything, but they require us to think something or to appreciate something or to look at things in a certain way. One of those mitzvos is to remember Hashem or not to forget Hashem. Rabbeinu Yonah writes that what does it mean to remember Hashem? Remember Hashem, what does that mean? Or don't forget Hashem, what does that mean? So Rabbeinu Yonah writes that someone who remembers Hashem will behave differently than someone who is not thinking about Hashem. For example, says Rabbeinu Yonah, someone who is remembering Hashem will have good midos. They will act with refined character. Someone who remembers Hashem will act with tznius, will act modestly. Someone who remembers Hashem will have yira, will fear Hashem. Someone who remembers Hashem will have kishut machashavos, will make sure that his thoughts are pure. When you remember Hashem, then in general we behave better. Our thoughts are better, our midos, our character traits are better, we act with greater modesty, because we recognize that we're in front of Hashem. If one forgets they're in front of Hashem, then these things fall away. Then people behave differently. Rabbeinu Yonah writes that Hashem expects us to behave in a manner that reflects the fact that we are in front of Hashem. So this is one of the places where someone asks, where does the Torah say to have good midos? We know you're supposed to have good midos. Pirkei Avos is not all about, but it's largely about having good midos, having good character trait. Be kind and be sensitive and to not get angry and things like that. Where does it say it? Some of these things are explicit in the Torah, but not all of them. So this is one of the places where it's brought out. Because if you're a person who remembers that we are all in front of Hashem, then our behavior reflects that. And that includes having good midos, having good character trait, where we are careful in the way that we conduct ourselves. That's part of remembering Hashem, not to forget Hashem. Okay, we're going to stop here again because I don't want to end in the middle of something that we won't be able to continue.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.